The opinions expressed in the following are those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the producers and the Six Talk Podcast Network. Also, the following contains mature material and mild language, which may not be suitable for all audiences. Discretion is advised.
Tributes continue to pour in for Dragon Ball creator Akira Toriyama. The legendary manga artist passed away on March 1st, with his death only announced by Bird Studio a week later on March 8th. With his funeral having happened already, being attended by close family and the closest of friends. So this morning, we'll add our own thoughts and tributes to Toriyama and the legacy he leaves behind on this March 10th, 2024. And I guess I'll start by saying, and this is a full disclosure from my end, and I think I said this also for a lot of the other times we've talked about these type of subjects and the passings of other well-known creators. I certainly didn't keep up with Dragon Ball, so I wasn't as big a fan of it. I fully admit that. I know who Toriyama is. I know Dragon Ball and its impact, if not the story itself. So there's a lot of respect for what he's done and the influence he had. And I think that's the key word, it's influence. Especially when you go down the list of all the tributes that have come out and where they've come from. And I know that this is the type of thing that has caught a lot of people's attention and caught a lot of people by surprise. So maybe that's as much as I can say, I can think about saying in right now, but maybe this is something worth just talking through. But I'm of a slightly older generation who probably, whose entry point into the fandom was a little bit different. So maybe someone not that much younger than me would probably understand the loss of Akira Toriyama a little more. Kevin, Mo, Amy, I know this one has more of your attention. Mo, you're the one who actually let me know about this. What's your guys' thoughts? 2 days since the announcing of his passing.
I know I personally was very shocked when it happened. I think I found out like about a half hour I was after the release happened, because you know the internet is a very fast place. You know, you release some news and it's out there really, really fast, and it's shocking that it had happened. The outpouring of everyone's reactions to it is just, I think that's kind of what got me, because it's like it reminds you of how many people his work touched, affected, influenced. You know, it's like a whole generation of people just like suddenly were like, yeah, shocked.
Kevin, Amy, can you guys do you want to offer a thought?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely sad news, but as Mo said, there's, you know, such a sort of, you know, heartwarming outpouring from so many different places around the world that, you know, it becomes, you know, kind of a sweet, you know, time. It's like even compared to, you know, a lot of the other, you know, celebrity deaths where it's been, you know, a little bit more sort of a combination of just, oh, yeah, this is a sad moment and look at the legacy beyond the legacy that maybe, you know, creators like or writers like Stan Lee, for example. This one, you know, for some reason, it seems more heartfelt. Like there seems to be maybe almost like a loss of childhood or a closer, you know, bond. Like there's been such a profound impact that this artist has had on so many people. And I think maybe it's that, you know, worldwide effect that he's had, which has separated it from a lot of the other, you know, losses that have happened in the last, you know, decade or so.
Kevin?
It was surprising to see the news. I actually saw it when Mo posted the link first, and I didn't believe him for a second. But
I feel bad that I'm like the spreader of bad news, guys. Sorry.
No, don't worry, it's okay. We're like you informed me as I was leaving work. Thursday night, so
like Mo, you all but willed Queen Elizabeth's death of all people.
Well, that was good.
I mean, honestly, I wish she could die a second time so we can have a Akira back. Like, if we can bring him back after
because we made those jokes over the course of like numerous episodes, and then it finally happened. But I feel like, I don't know. I feel like it was pretty sudden. Granted, of course, with most Japanese people, these deaths had happened 1 or 2 weeks before. It's just that the announcement only came out on Friday. And
like Thursday.
If I'm not mistaken, he was still actively involved in production with Dragon Ball Daima, which is supposed to come out this year.
Hmm.
He was still working.
Yeah, I think that's what got me the most about it, because like, he's 68 and was like midway through something. Plus the manner in which he died is like so sudden. Like, hematoma's like, that can happen to anyone at any moment, you know?
Yeah, let's go through some of this. Acute subdural hematoma, that's referred to as the cause of his death. It is, when I read up on it, it sounds like it's something that's consistent with head trauma and would probably be consistent with head trauma gained when in a fall or something. But according to some Japanese language reports, he had noted to some acquaintances and friends that he would be going in for a brain tumor surgery of some sort too in the coming month or so. So there's a number of conflicting reports as to, you know, the specifics of the condition that eventually took Toriyama. I get it doesn't really matter, but sometimes you just have to just rationalize it and try and understand, try and just find many different ways to understand what's happened. And it's another interesting point. When we talked about the whole Japanese way of doing this, of announcing these type of things, it happened with Kentaro Miura. We knew about his passing weeks after he had passed away and his funeral had taken place. We didn't really know too many details about the victims of the Kyoto Animation fire at the time it happened. We only start to learn about the names of the victims a couple weeks later there as well, if at all. So the usual protocols for Toriyama that we've become sadly familiar with over the last couple years came into play again. And it's amazing because, as I said, this was a very private service, and immediate family members and it is said a few of his closest friends were the only ones to have attended. And by all accounts, Toriyama just seemed like a very private person. There aren't too many recent pictures of him. Most of the pictures I've seen are from the 80s. And I looked at them and thought, wow, that's a young 68. But no, these were like from the mid-80s, around the time he started to really start becoming popular. And then one of the photos was with a young Jackie Chan as well. But I think the most recent photo I've been able to find, at least in the last 24 hours, is just a old picture of him from 2002, which is plastered on his Wikipedia page. I get the feeling if I dig a little bit more, I could find a few more, but something tells me those would be rather few and far between. This is just something kind of amazing that just grabbed my attention, and at least in that sense. It's just that I get the feeling he wouldn't like, because there are so few pictures of him, you could walk into a room a lot of the time. It would still take a little bit for people to recognize who he is.
Even with the, there's been a lot of compilations of his self-portraits over the years, and even they have become more obscure to the point where, you know, his initial drawings were basically actual self-portraits, you know, him with, you know, his glasses and, you know, recognizable but cartoony. And then, of course, like the most recent, you know, self-portraits of him have that sort of now famous gas mask that, you know, has, you know, like that's his, you know, author self insert, or that's the way he wants to depict himself. So the fact that even his self portraits have become more obscure is really interesting. And, you know, we see that with a lot of other manga artists and writers as well, where you have, you know, early, you know, photos and they're, you know, posing, and then later on, they obscure their face in some way. I know, you know, Shaman King's Takei does the same thing with, you know, a huge mask that he wears in public. And
Jigaki, we constantly joke about her, you know, mm-hmm. depicting herself with a chicken face, right? And yeah, she often exactly. wears that mask. She often wears the mask, even in her wedding photos. And then I think, I think it's the creator of Full Metal Alchemist. Is it she or he?
It's a she.
It's a she.
And she depicts herself as a cow because she's from I think Hiroshima.
She's from northern Japan. Yeah.
So she depicts herself as a cow or something. Not Hiroshima, but
I also I do feel it speaks to you know the respect that Japanese, even celebrities, have for privacy. Like, if this had happened with, you know, an American celebrity, I don't think that a week would have passed, or it would be very unusual for a week to have passed without the news leaking out. So, you know, I am thankful for, you know, his friends that were there, having that respect to give to the family. Like, I'm you know, earnestly happy that, you know, his family got that.
Got that time to mourn. Got that good week.
Honestly, the fact that they waited as long as they did is remarkable. I think that's just the way they do it in Japan a lot of the times. But I appreciate that they gave them that time to mourn.
Yeah, as much as we're all curious, I think we all understand. I certainly would understand. I think we all do. It sounds like. So, the tributes. The tributes going across the board, they came from the usual places. I think Oda from One Piece, the creator of Naruto, the creator of Video Girl Eye, Masakazu Katsura, says they've all released heartfelt statements over the years. What grabbed my attention was some of the others who released statements. Emmanuel Macron released a few statements. The leaders in El Salvador released a few. I think they declared a mourning period. Jackie Chan, I made that joke. Jackie Chan released a few. Anything out there that in the tributes that caught your attention? Let me just quickly add. I remember when you during the pandemic series, Amy, you kept mentioning about the appeal of certain titles in certain countries. Right, when you talked about how Saint Seiya would have had a broader appeal in Latin America when you talked about your past experiences, and when I started to hear about the tributes, I haven't really taken too much time to read them, but when I started to hear about where they were coming from, I thought of what you said. This type of appeal. So that's what that's already the thing that's already caught my attention in all of this.
And if you look at a lot of the, not even tributes to Toriyama's passing and legacy in general, but, you know, Dragon Ball, there's, you know, infamous photos of the, you know, I think it's called Takeda's Goku in Mexico, like the taco place with, you know, a Super Saiyan Goku carving up the meat. There's countless, you know, places like that, especially in Latin America, that have used or I'll just say South, Central, and North America that have used, you know, Goku and Dragon Ball characters as, you know, advertising, as tributes. It's, you know, definitely not as, I'd say, ubiquitous as Saint Seiya there, but it's still, you know, I'd say just as, if not more, of a powerful cultural touchstone than in North America.
Exactly, exactly. And the fact that an entire nation has declared a state of mourning, you know, for the passing of such a great, great artist is it really speaks measures to the impact he had, not only in that region, but like throughout the world.
You can probably think about like so many countries, every continent. I'm reminded of, you know, a video from probably a decade or two now of in Taiwan, someone making a flying Nimbus and, you know, sort of floating, skating around, you know, the city there. And, you know, everyone was like, oh, wow, you know, look at what Japan's done. And, you know, I remember people saying, no, this is, you know, Taiwan. And, you know, just, you know, my memories of, you know, Costa Rica, of course, everyone, you know, knew Dragon Ball, of course, in Japan, but I'll get into that probably later. But yeah, throughout the world, if you remember the finale for Dragon Ball Super, I think it was Mexico I don't know if it was Mexico City, but a city in Mexico, you know, played the finale, live streamed it to, you know, a central square kind of equivalent to our Young and Dundas, like with the big screens and everything. And like so many people staring up and watching.
Honestly, I saw that same video compilation and it's like, it reminds me of when people watched Endgame in theaters and the reaction they gave to that. Like, that's the level of, and this is like outdoor with like thousands of people watching this on, like watching the finale of a sporting event or like the Super Bowl or something. It's that level of passion. And it's so great. It's so great.
You know, when you put in those terms, I think I start to think about something like, I think the finale of either Cheers or Seinfeld or even both were done at, was shown at the Dome, at Sky Dome.
Yeah,
back in the day, right? And those were cultural events. That was a cultural event at the time, and that seems like a likening to, and that goes for something to get that type of level, to get that type of level attention. I mean, I sort of remember. I have a vague some memory of those of the endings of those TV series to have a show like. That got a similar level at the time.
With Dragon Ball, I think it's also really like it shows how powerful the story and franchise is, because, you know, I enjoyed Dragon Ball Super well enough, but like I don't think it, you know, had or will have the impact of Z or even the original you know, Dragon Ball when we're referring to the anime. But you know, that those memories, that nostalgia, that passion people have for the characters, even, you know, a show that, you know, I don't think will have, you know, the same impact, it still sort of fostered that kind of response from people, I think is, you know, it's really a testament to, you know, the power of this story and these characters that have been created.
I don't know what else to add. It's just, well, we do have to talk about legacy, I guess, right? When you think about Dragon Ball and what that accomplished for Toriyama, you often use the phrases best selling, which is true, but the other phrase is most influential. And I mean, we can start, and that can take on a bunch of branches as we go down here. Yes, Dragon Ball is the big one. That's by far what Toriyama will be most well known for. But let's go down the list a little bit. I mean, Dr. Slump was a thing for a lot of people and showed off another side. Just to start to get into it, I remember somebody put a picture of one of the main characters of Dr. Slump and then put it beside a picture of Mario from Super Mario 3. And I guess the purpose was to show off the similarities. And ironically, we're talking about all this on Mario Day on March 10th.
It's not just the similarities. Like if the the superficial similarities, the I don't know how verifiable this is, but the way Mario runs, especially in those games, is thought to be a tribute to Arale.
Yeah, Arale. That's the character's name.
Yeah, and then if you go into, you know, the countless parallels and influence Sonic the Hedgehog that series has had, from the idea of Super Sonic itself to Yasushi Yamaguchi, the designer of Tails, saying that the relationship between Sonic and Tails was influenced by Gohan and Piccolo. There are scenes taken out of the most recent Sonic game that Sonic Frontiers that seem to echo and pay tribute to sort of early Z era Dragon Ball. And, you know, the tropes, like you can, you know, model Shadow off of Goku and, Shadow off of Vegeta, Sonic is Goku, Silver being Trunks from the future. And that's just, you know, the two, I'd say, biggest character-based video games have, you know, connections to, I'd say, probably Toriyama's two most influential manga works, and that's, you know, not even getting into, you know, how big of an institution Dragon Quest is, and I'm a little bit surprised. I mean, it shows the power of Dragon Ball, I think, internationally versus Dragon Quest being mostly, a Japanese love, I guess. But, you know, thinking about, you know, how much, you know, people, like, Dragon Quest releases were, you know, almost slash actual national holidays. And although Toriyama is, you know, the artist behind that and not necessarily the game designers, you know, if you think about the iconography of the slime, and it's funny, if you look at the original pitch for slime, it's just an actual D&D style monster, and then Toriyama comes back with this teardrop smiling thing that has become, you know, so iconic and influential in its own right, that like one little character design. And then in a similar instance, I'd say almost a Cowboy Bebop, where, you know, it's a good show and recognized in Japan, but it's amazingly popular in the West. I see the same thing for Chrono Trigger.
I was wondering when you'd bring up Chrono Trigger, because now we're starting to get into the more direct influences on video games, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but I was wondering when you'd bring up Chrono Trigger, and I know that to be one of the all time greats when it comes to Japanese RPGs. I don't know it well, but it's
I think that's an interesting, because, like, you know, you talked a little bit at the beginning of the episode about the interesting sort of generational gap between, I guess, yourself and the three of us. I think Chrono Trigger might be that space right in the middle between yourself and the three of us, where I think a lot of the Chrono Trigger fans probably come from. Because I know when it came out, I was probably a little bit too young for to be attracted by, you know, a long, expansive RPG like that. But I also think it's worth noting that, you know, I think the year I was born, you know, the actual Dragon Ball Z was, like, I think well into at the end of Frieza, or maybe even a little bit later, which is such an interesting, like, time dilation or time, just a piece of temporal, you know, things that people don't think about, is that by the time Dragon Ball Z became really popular here, it was finished. Like, you know, when it was popular and coming out, they were releasing that Dragon Ball GT Final Bout game, which, you know, it's, Dragon Ball is a fairly old franchise
the popularity, right? Hit its mainstream popularity in at least North America, if not other parts of the world.
I find that really interesting.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because, like, if I'm not mistaken, Z was, like, it didn't get its English debut till, like, the mid to late 90s. I remember being in, like, elementary school and, like, watching week to week episodes coming out. So it's, like, yeah, it's weird, you know.
Well, it is worth noting. Okay, Cartoon Network pays tribute to Dragon Ball creator. So obviously, over the last couple of days, Toonami was a big benefactor of all of this, and Cartoon Network. So obviously, they gave their own tributes, just in the form of just a couple of tweets, but still, it goes for something, right? Comicbook.com kind of there's a line here I read in their tribute. What is it? And when Adult Swim, I'm just looking at this. Well, 1998, Cartoon Network first began airing reruns of the Dragon Ball Z's English dub. The anime became such a success for the network that the channel worked with Funimation to resume production on the series and dub the installments of the series that had never made the leap from Japan to North America. I think that's the line I was looking for. It kickstarted the dubs again, and maybe into the form. Maybe this was the first step to the form that we're now seeing it in now. Sorry, Amy.
Oh yeah, I was just going to, bring, I guess, the local flavor into it of, you know, Dragon Ball, the original, was airing when I was really little. Like, I remember, I must have been five.
Might have been YTV.
Yeah, I think it was. I was incredibly young, like 4 or 5, I would say. And I remember loving Dragon Ball. It was only the Pilaf arc. It never got beyond that. Like, it just reset after it. But I remember, you know, being entranced by, you know, the story and the characters and everything, even with that relatively limited exposure to what the grander story was. And I remember briefly, Teletoon had Dragon Ball Z, and it aired super late. And I remember watching it and being so confused that Goku was an adult. And I think the episode I watched, he was flying to Namek, and I remember him opening the fridge and going like, "Ew, beer, no of that, no way," and something like that, which is accurate to the Japanese version, but it was still such a weird moment to go from not knowing that there was more to this story to an adult Goku in space on a spaceship. It was such a huge shift. And then of course YTV got Dragon Ball Z, and we can talk about the English dub aspect of it and the fact that it was dubbed in Canada, but I really feel that for 90s kids everywhere, none of us will forget, hearing the commercials or the announcements saying Dragon Ball Z at 9:30 or 4:30 or 5:30. Like, they would always air Dragon Ball Z on a 30 so they could have that stupid and silly advertising jingle to get it locked into people's brains. I think that there's an interesting and powerful, connection to Canada. With Dragon Ball Z, we are the, originators of over 9,000. We don't have the super local connection like Sailor Moon or Metabots, where it's in Toronto. But, the fact that, this series has, and I'm positive that, the same can be said for so many other countries, Italy, Mexico, Spain, where they have these local celebrities singing the openings, the covers, and the completely weird Italian songs that they're semi-famous for, plus the voice actors. All of these people are, huge celebrities, not because they're voice actors or singers, but because they're connected to Dragon Ball.
Dragon Ball. That makes sense. Yeah, maybe rightfully or wrongfully, as recent years have gone too. So, but we, as I said, we just keep going on the whole influence thing. Let me go through some of the names that have passed in the last few years. We started, remember, we mentioned Kentaro Miura, We focused an entire segment during our Anime North episode on our wider Anime North episode online to talking about Kentaro Miura. Leiji Matsumoto last year, forget it. And Kazuki Takahashi, I know people don't always recognize the name, but people will recognize Yu-Gi-Oh! This is different. Akira Toriyama is a very, like, his passing cuts a lot different this time around. I mean, Leiji Matsumoto's passing was a sad moment for the lifers, for the longtime lifers, the true older otaku, the otaku, so to speak, right? That was a key moment. Kentaro Miura's cut a fairly recent generation, obviously, but in many respects, we wouldn't have like Dragon Ball if Leiji Matsumoto started the fire, there were moments of accelerate. There were moments of this is a bad metaphor, but since I just started the word fire. There were moments where it was accelerated or the fire got a little stronger. And I think the moment where where that fire was ensured to continue happened with Toriyama. And then I think we wouldn't be where we are, I think, without Dragon Ball. I think and we can debate this one. I think two titles in the 90s probably did it for a lot of people. Dragon Ball and Sailor Moon. We wouldn't see our Berserks without something like Dragon Ball. We wouldn't see our Narutos or Bleaches or One Pieces without Dragon Ball. We wouldn't reach the heights that those titles have hit if Dragon Ball didn't get to those heights first. And whatever popular shoujos are there, Sailor Moon probably had a similar effect on the shoujo side. And that's another, and I know we'll talk about that and the titles that have come since, but I don't think we'd be where we are. I think that's a safe assumption. We wouldn't be really where we are if Dragon Ball didn't happen. So I just want to give that thought to everybody here. But this one cuts. So while I myself may not have gotten into Dragon Ball and probably found my hook, line, and sinker drugs with other titles, this was the hook, line, and sinker for a lot of people. And you've made it when there are as many mainstream tributes out there. We've gone through some of them, maybe some of the more entertaining and humorous ones, but also just at the same time very poignant ones also happened over this weekend's soccer matches in the J League, when all the goal celebrations seem to be poses from Dragon Ball. It's just funny enough, sadly, Kentaro Miura is from Nagoya, and his hometown team, the Nagoya Grampus 8, unfortunately lost late to Albrecht's Niigata on the road. Or Albrecht's Niigata. I pronounced it wrong. But I just thought those were... those were just some of the other influences. Can I go back to the video game side just for one moment, and then you guys can continue your thoughts? Kotaku also made in the articles commemorating Toriyama. They mentioned how much he may have tried to help out Xbox. Because he was also a key guy behind Blue Dragon, Xbox's attempt to get into the Japanese RPG market, and in turn probably help increase its own appeal in Japan. So in many respects, he tried there. Blue Dragon, I think, came out in the mid-aughts. Didn't have the impact that was hoped, but it had a bit of a following, it sounds like. But I don't know much about this, but that just speaks to the multiple ways that Toriyama contributed into the video game industry. And who would have thunk that he was indirectly or directly on Team Xbox in many respects as well. I don't know, but okay, I've gone long enough. Anything else you guys want to add, or like any tributes out there that caught your attention over the past 2 days?
Well, I will say that out of all the Dragon Balls, I always did prefer Kid Goku over Adult Goku, to be honest.
So you're a fan of GT then?
No, not that one. I was waiting for someone to bring that up, actually, when I said that.
I thought we weren't going to mention that.
I definitely preferred like the Dragon Ball aspect of it. Now, I know in Japan it's all called Dragon Ball. Z was mostly a
the series North
American
itself.
And abroad labeling, but I also was the type to watch Dragon Ball first as a younger child, and then all of a sudden Dragon Ball Z popped up, because I actually don't know if YTV aired all of Dragon Ball at the time. I think they eventually did, but I actually remember watching maybe only the first 13 or so episodes when Goku had his first transformation, and then didn't catch most of the rest of the first series because I would only catch it on reruns. So I would see some of the Red Ribbon Army saga, and I did see some of the last Budokai tournament. When Goku was a bit older. But otherwise, most of my exposure was Dragon Ball Z, and then the first and last thirds of GT. And I've read some of Super as well. I haven't finished reading original Dragon Ball either. I've been meaning to do that for quite a while.
I wonder if any sales or maybe at least online reads will go brisk this week.
Yeah. I also was a big fan of Dr. Slump as well. Really enjoyed reading The Misadventures of Senbei Noriaki and Aurele and friends.
See, it's interesting because in the old days of my anime club, right? I think the founders wanted to push Dr. Slump to let people know about that one quite a bit, and showed a few OAVs from that.
And not to mention, we also have Sandland coming out as well. That was a one-shot Toriyama did after Dragon Ball. Because after Dragon Ball, the man didn't really need to stress.
This is one of those who could chart their own course now, right? I made that joke. People who can chart their own course, because what else do they have to prove?
Togashi himself said in an interview that usually you only need one big hit, and then that's when you can more or less set your own terms when it comes to your creative output.
Yeah. Because maybe one, but a one, right?
And I feel like with Toriyama, those, it was like Sandlin and Jaco the Galactic Patrolman were titles where it was more like when he felt like drawing again, he would do it, which is cool, right? Like, and because he also had his work with Dragon Quest too.
Mm-hmm.
He was still doing character designs for most of those later titles.
No, he was still busy. He was still busy right up until the end.
Sandlin also had the distinction of being in North America's first Shonen Jump magazine that they released. They decided to include that in the sort of compilation of series, which is how I was exposed to it. And when it comes to, Jaco, a fairly, not main character in Super, but, you know, became a, you know, fixture, which is, I guess, an XP character, which is the sort of, term for it. So it's, and, you know, of course, Arale had so many cameos in the Dragon Ball franchise. So I really like that, Toriyama seemed to have a playfulness, with a lot of his characters, like all of his, or most of his villains being based off of editors or real estate agents he didn't like, and, people at, I think, Shueisha and things like that, where he'd kill them off in, you know, numerous ways. So he clearly had a sense of humor, was sort of at the whim of a fairly, you know, strict, editorial team. I don't think he did anything as, you know, nefarious as what happened with Negima, but, you know, clearly he was still, you know, at times, you know, struggling to do the art he wanted to do while balancing that with what the audience and the editors wanted.
Yeah. See, when you talk about these stories and we make these old jokes about charting your course, one story that sort of came out after Sean Connery's death last year, or was it the year before? They kept saying, well, at a point he did, for a long time he did movies that were pretty bad, but he did them because the paycheck was good. And then in his later years, towards the end, he just started to do movies again, the types of movies he wanted to do. And I think that's sort of the same line of thinking here. Similar line of thinking. Okay. Are we almost done with the thoughts, or? I know, it's an emotional time.
I think I had sort of two major things to end with. The first being that when we're thinking of these, you know, huge figures in the manga industry, I would say that a creator like Tezuka, if you're thinking of these creators as trees, for example, I think Tezuka's tree probably has a bigger trunk, but Toriyama's definitely has so many more branches. And they've sort of spread further and I don't know about higher, but definitely further and into more generations than Tezuka's probably has, at least visibly. Tezuka, you could probably say the roots are also thicker and they spread out, you know, further and stronger than Toriyama, since when we're talking about manga, Toriyama is pretty sort of set in the shonen world versus Tezuka spreads out a little bit more. That I think is, you know, so evident by, you know, stories like, this has been going around on Twitter, but, and not directly related to Toriyama, but, you know, a bedridden terminal child writing to Goku's, or his father writing to Goku's voice actor saying, can you give an autograph? My child has maybe a month left. And the actor sent a voice message saying, oh, in August, there's going to be a new movie. I'll be at the theater. I hope to see you there, in Goku's voice. And, you know, she sent that off. And sure enough, like a month after the film had released, the father sends a message or writes the voice actor saying, somehow, you know, my son lasted 6 more months, and, you know, we wheeled the bed into the hospital or into the movie theater, and he was able to watch it, and he passed away the next day. And the letter also had a note from the doctor saying, you know, I now understand the power of anime. And I really, you know, think that, you know, those stories exist with every franchise. I'm positive that there are similar stories with Star Trek and with Star Wars and, you know, Pokemon and everything. But the generational, because this would have been a more recent movie, the generational impact of Dragon Ball, I think, is, you know, something that has, like, we'll see if One Piece it manages to do this, but I don't know if any other, especially Japanese franchise, you know, maybe Kamen Rider, but those get refreshed, has the staying power and impact of Dragon Ball. There was one time when I was living in Japan, I got roped into a tennis tournament, and I was walking, you know, we were done practicing, and two teachers, I think a math teacher and a history teacher, I forget exactly, but we were walking away, and I think the one teacher was just about my age, maybe a year younger, a year older, and the other one was probably 5 or 10 years our senior, and they had known that, you know, I was interested in manga and anime and things like that. And neither of these two people are English teachers, but in their best attempt at English, they say, oh, do you like Dragon Ball? Or it's like, you know, I don't even think they said, do you like Dragon Ball? I think they just started with, who's your favorite Dragon Ball character, which was awkward for me because my favorites are 18 and Piccolo, which are not the most popular. You know, I think, you know, there, yeah, Piccolo's a little bit up there, but 18, not as much. But they, when I said that, they were like, I didn't know, I think it's Juhachigo. I didn't know 18 in Japanese at that point, at least not when I was on, you know, had to think on my feet. But you know, their face lit up, just me responding. I think I could have said anything. And, you know, the one said, oh, mine's, you know, this character, I forget what it said. And then the older goes like, mine's Vegeta. And it was so cute to hear them, because, you know, Ichiban daisuki. And they're trying to figure out how to say, what's your favorite Dragon Ball character in English? And, you know, as I said, like, there wasn't even a question that if I knew manga and anime, that I would have a favorite Dragon Ball character. It doesn't matter, you know, boy, girl, young, old. You at least know Dragon Ball, and I don't think you can say that for Astro Boy or even, you know, sadly, something like Sailor Moon. You know, especially at those young ages, like anyone, like boy, girl, nerd, jock, everyone is going to be exposed to it. And yeah, I think that's, you know, a really powerful thing that this author created, that connects people, you know, around the world between cultures. And it's kind of a silly show, as Kevin said, like Z gets, you know, really into just fighting and powering up. It's meme to all.
For an entire episode. Often.
Yeah. You know, the standard joke of, you know, how long does it take for, or how many Saiyans does it take to screw in a light bulb? One, but it takes 5 episodes. Like, there's so many, but even that's valuable. The jokes and the, you know, things like that. But, you know, it's not, say, you know, fine literature, but it's probably had more impact than a lot of fine literature or, you know, in sort of sophisticated visual art. It's powerful. Trying to figure out how to work over 9,000 in there, but I couldn't really.
me a sec here. I guess, Mo, I just realized you sent a picture, and I've seen this picture already.
It's a good picture.
It's a good picture because it depicts characters from all the other major Shonen Jump franchises in chibi form as kids, but all the Dragon Ball characters are depicted as camp counselors. And everybody else, all the other Shonen Jump characters as campers, like Boy Scouts, and girls as like Boy Scouts or something, right?
Yeah, like also, as campers. Yeah. But I like the details that's put into each of the characters and their reactions to Goku's storytelling. I like how Sasuke's in the back with Vegeta, you know, being solemn and so forth, and how Deku's so into it, and you know how everyone's just, it's very good. It's very good.
And we'll put a picture of this. We'll put a picture of this for sure in the links.
Though, if I had to be a stickler,
yes. Okay, be a stickler. Please be a stickler.
Don't know why Happy's there.
Yeah.
Melodious is there, but it's okay. They're all Shonen properties too, just not Shonen Jump properties.
So you kind of get the feel. You kind of get the vibe and what they were trying to get at.
Yeah.
You have a final thought, Kevin?
One
more.
I'm trying to think here. I actually was going through some of the comments by the Shonen Jump staff and other creators and whatnot, and I think the two that stuck out in my mind. I actually need to read Oda's still, but I read Masakazu Katsura's thoughts, and I was like, oh wow, like I was like, oh, like I can tell he was pretty, like it weighed on him heavily, because he was basically talking about how like they barely talked about manga whenever they spoke to each other, and I think one excerpt I saw was, when I called him a little while ago, I was feeling unwell and said, I might pass away first, so please have a farewell party for me, and you'll be in charge, Toriyama-san. Also, give a speech, since it'll come with prestige. But he couldn't keep his promise. I really regret not calling him after he messaged me. It's a shame we can't call each other anymore to talk nonsense for a long time. I have a lot of things I want to talk about, and there are many things to say. I want to talk to you again, even if you're listening blankly to something you're not interested in, like you did. It's no good that the last time you replied to my message asking you to get a hold of me, you wrote a light okay. It hurts from the bottom of my heart. I was like, oh.
Still.
And then there was Toyotaro, who went on to draw Dragon Ball Super. On Twitter, he wrote, I drew manga because I wanted to be praised by Toriyama Sensei. He was everything to me, and that's all he wrote.
Maybe that says enough.
And then on this ANN article, I also see his original editor wrote something too. So Kazuhiko Torishima was his editor in the 80s. So I think it was his prominent editor. And then he wrote, last year's book, Dr. Mashirito Saikyo Manga Jutsu, was the last project we worked on together. And it was the last manga the Torishima and Toriyama from back then pair created. Thank you very much for the past 45 years. Toriyama-san, you were the best manga author.
Probably as much as you needed to know. I guess I'll end it by saying maybe the most interesting tribute, ironically, I could think of might have came from Toriyama himself. Matt Alt mentioned a number of parallels between him and Osamu Tezuka. Tezuka did do a adaptation of Journey to the West as well, and Dragon Ball Z, as many know, is an adaptation of it as well, of Journey to the West, and it's probably its most famous modern adaptation. or bass. But Tezuka did a version of it as well. I think it was in and it became an animated movie, I believe, in the 50s. But Matt Ald also posted just after the announcement of Toriyama's passing, quote, "I'm old enough to remember Osamu Tezuka's death in 1989, and I see echoes of it in the response to Akira Toriyama's passing. Tezuka called Toriyama almost too good, quote unquote, and his, quote unquote, heir apparent. And Toriyama wrote, without Tezuka's work, I don't think I'd have become the artist I am. And I think that is a sentiment many of his fans and newer and younger artists have for him 35 years on. Akira Toriyama, gone at the age of 68. Okay, before we end this evening, let's lighten it up a little bit. We do have really just a couple items on the anime community calendar for this week. And I get it, we got a lot of other things to talk about in the future. This is the recording one of March. We'll have at least one more, probably two more, if the others are willing to do coffee on next Sunday or the Sunday after. Okay, on the anime community calendar, two things that to talk about. Humble Bundle has been on a bit of a roll the last month. Last month they had the, what is it, another bundle of digital manga from Kodansha, which I got in on, and I hope Kevin got in on, because otherwise he'd miss another chance to finish up Drops of God.
I bought that bundle. If it's the one with Drops of God and all the other critically acclaimed titles, yeah, I bought that because I knew that was my one chance to get Drops of God at a great price.
Legit in any legitimate form, right? Whether it's digital or not.
Yeah, because I otherwise would have needed to subscribe to Amazon Prime. Now I have to wait for that second sequel series to finish being released, because Kodansha did start releasing that, actually. Drops of God Marriage.
Oh, yeah, that one. The other one, yeah. So, right now, on Humble Bundle for the rest of this week, Stonebridge Press has a digital bundle of 22 books. If you're willing to pony up the better part of $25 Canadian, or less than that in American. As I said, 22 books about Japanese language, culture, and travel. One of the books to make note of, and there's plenty in there that looks interesting enough, but there is a copy of Dreamland Japan in there from our from friend of the show, Fred Schott. So there it is right there. Give it a look. We'll put the link in our show notes, and if I remember, I'll put it in the tweet as well. Also, if you're in Toronto, the Momiji Center, which is a center for a seniors home for Japanese Canadians in Scarborough, they're going to be holding an anime market on Saturday, March 23rd and Sunday, March 24th. They are looking for vendors. And they want to, as they like to put it, they're trying to keep up with the trends too. Vendors will be setting up booths in the Momiji building, which is a really nice looking place, and selling all manner of fandom goods, whether it's, I guess, secondhand stuff or just related items. And workshops will be held throughout the weekend about Japanese arts and crafts. Snacks will be available to purchase as well. So there is an encouragement to apply as a vendor if you have a chance. And if you want, even go. But admittedly, there is a small entrance fee, but proceeds will go to the Momiji Center. And it is a really, really wonderful place and a very worthy cause. So we'll put up a link to that. As I said, there's plenty of other stuff we would love to talk about in the coming month. I know that reward season has reaching its peak.
I was gonna say before we leave off, I mean, tonight's gonna be the night where you know, Hayao Miyazaki might take another award.
Oh yes, that's right. The Oscars are on tonight. That's right. So we'll see.
Although I'm just gonna say right now that it's gonna be really sad when he loses to Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
I was going to ask, what are the nominations for Best Animated this year?
What are they?
Sorry. It's The Boy and the Heron, Elementals, Nimona, Robot Dreams, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Cool. And you gave your prediction. I know awards, as I said, we'll talk more about awards season. There are other headlines I know that are, we do want to talk about that have happened over the last little while. And are probably old stories, but still very interesting ones. But obviously, they take a backseat to what we just talked about today with Toriyama's passing. It is Mario Day. Yes, March 10th is Mario Day. So happy Mario Day. Do you have a thought on that? Or I know James would, but he's occupied today. But do you guys have a thought? I just don't know what else to add. But happy Mario Day. There is news, though, on the movie front there, right?
Well, Mario Kart's finally on sale again. It's been a while.
Cool.
It's rarely on sale.
Oh, okay.
It's only maybe been on sale. This might be only the second or third time it's been on sale throughout its lifetime on the Switch, because Mario Kart is one of their best-selling titles, so there's usually very little incentive to put it on sale.
I'm not going to say it. Don't worry.
It's also why Smash Brothers never goes on sale for the most part, and that's why main series Pokemon games don't go on sale either. They just do too well.
So the timing is hardly a coincidence in that sense. There is a little bit more some news on the movie front, though, right?
I believe they said they're going to have a second one out in 2026. But like I said, you never know about that type of situation. But it'll be another Mario movie.
I'm sure we'll be able to talk about that in the near future. But, plenty of time for that, I guess. Plenty of time to talk about all that and all the other stuff. But as I said, it's that right now that all takes a backseat to to the big news this week. And that's exhausting enough. So that's all we got for now. If you want to contact us, animeroundtable.com is our link tree page. There's links to everywhere we are online, whether it's the podcast, the Twitch channel, which we'll have something soon, YouTube, and just about everything, and just about everywhere else we are online. So just check that out. Check that out for everything Anime Roundtable. But at its heart, we are a podcast, so please leave us a review where you can, wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a like, because good reviews might help us in the algorithm. Right, Kevin?
You bet it is.
As I said, for now we aim to add at least something once or at least twice a month. Life does get in the way. But we'll be back before the end of the month. In any event, give us a like, a subscribe, or a follow on any of the platforms we're on so you can be notified when we're there. And who knows, as I said, it could be Twitch before the end of the week. Seriously. Also, if you have a Spotify account, please check out the Anime Roundtable playlist for a list of music based on things we've mentioned on this show. The theme song is entitled Fubuki Snowstorm by Piku Misaki. You can check out more of her music at picoinfinity.com or on Facebook at Pico Zen Music. You could have listened to any anime podcast in the world, but you've decided to listen to the oldest, which is now 18 years and running as of last week. So we really do appreciate it. So until next time, thanks for listening. Enjoy your Sunday from Toronto. Join us again for another edition of the Anime Roundtable.